Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. Welcoming back to the show, Superintendent of Bridgeport Public Schools, Michael Testani. Good morning, Superintendent Testani. What a year that you guys got through. Thank you for all the work that you and everyone with the Bridgeport Public Schools did this year to get our kids and our staff through. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Good morning, Melissa.
So I wanted to talk about this story that seems to really matter to a lot of our listeners, dissolving the School Volunteer Association of Bridgeport. First of all, for anyone who's not familiar with this decades-long program, what is it?
Well, I mean, in essence, the School Volunteer Association of Bridgeport Incorporated is an entity that has existed here in collaboration with the Bridgeport Public Schools. We were the employer of the three employees for many years. Then it went to two. We provided, you know, the space, the office space and the facilities. And then they were an organization that did some outreach and in coordinating some mentoring services and tutoring services for students here in the Bridgeport Public Schools. So a few years ago, the positions that we funded, basically all the positions, were cut from the budget. And the onus was put on the Volunteer Association, as any other organization, to fundraise and to fund those positions. And at this point, they no longer, after 2 years of doing this, they're saying that they can't do that anymore. It's just a heavy lift. So they've dissolved. But the services for students are not going away.
Okay, so the mentorship, the tutoring, that's going to continue, and if so, how?
So the mentoring component of what the School Volunteer Association has done for decades will be shifted over to Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Southwestern Connecticut. They obviously know how to do this. They've been doing this a long time. So now they will just expand the number of mentors that they have available working with kids here in Bridgeport. And the tutoring component is being shifted over to Caribe Youth Leaders here in Bridgeport. I've already had a nice conversation and a meeting with those folks. They're excited. They've already hired somebody on their end that they will fund, that will coordinate the tutoring efforts with the district. So we're excited to see this all continue. And one of the last employees is still an employee here in the district of the School Volunteer Association office, who did a lot of the coordination of things like Read Aloud Day. So we have her on board working on that. So I don't think you're going to miss a beat. I actually think you're going to see an enhancement of services, just because the lift now will be distributed amongst organizations that have more capacity to continue this work for Bridgeport Public School kids.
So help me to just understand this a little bit better. Superintendent Michael Testani is here with the Bridgeport Public Schools. So for the School Volunteer Association of Bridgeport, after 54 years, was this a financial reason that it went away, or was this a staffing reason that this went away?
Well, it was a model that I think incredibly lasted 54 years based solely on the expenditures paid by the Bridgeport Public Schools. All the salaries and benefits were paid by the district. A few years ago, my predecessor and eliminated it from the budget when we were short of resources, and they were able to sustain it briefly as an organization through fundraising. But I mean, it was not a sustainable model given today's climate and the lack of resources in Bridgeport. Now, I know in the Connecticut Post, we have some folks that want to chime in that really aren't familiar with the situation to say, well, you can use federal dollars, but that's just putting a Band-Aid on a problem for a short period of time. I think the model that's been created now with other community organizations picking up components of this is going to be sustainable well into the future.
So to be honest, Michael Testani, I haven't even read the Connecticut Post article. I know they had said something, but I haven't even read it in full. I just know from our listeners, really, that they were very upset to hear about this program going away. And of course, had a lot of theories. And I don't go off of theories. I go off of fact. So was this financial?
At the time when it was eliminated from the budget a couple of years ago, it was financial. A long term, it is a financial decision, but it's also a sustainability decision as well. We just don't have the capacity here in the district to continue to run this. It was basically a department in the district under the auspice of the School Volunteer Association Incorporated. They had a board, they had decisions that they made, but the entire financial burden was being placed on the Bridgeport Public Schools, which I think is unfair. I think they did great work. As you mentioned, 54 years. The model was 54 years old. In today's world, we need to shift a little bit. We need to pivot. And again, I'm confident that Bridgeport Caribe Youth Leaders is going to do an amazing job. They've already hit the ground running in coordinating tutors with our folks here in the district. And I'm sure Big Brothers and Big Sisters, once we sit down with them, will have no issues in creating those mentorships for kids here in Bridgeport at a high level.
And I just know that this program in particular really was a driving factor for talking specifically to like the school boards and trying to advocate for funding in education, which unfortunately it's not just Bridgeport. I think all across our area, we see that education funds get cut all the time because of budgets and everything and where we're at. The only reason I kept bringing up funding, Michael, is because I know Bridgeport in particular has gotten a boatload of money from the federal government. And that's why I was curious if this was a financial issue. You know, do we have the money allotted to bring it back to life? But you're saying that this was a burden basically on the Bridgeport Public Schools in the last few years.
In the last few years, it was a significant number of dollars when you start to look at all the things that have been cut in terms of services for children. At this time, we do have federal dollars coming in. So people would say, well, why don't you just use that money? But then what happens in a couple of years when that money dries up? We're going to be back in this situation again. I think it's a good time. They've decided to transition their services to these other organizations. And like I said, I think this is going to be a much more sustainable model. And it takes the burden off the Bridgeport Public Schools to coordinate all these efforts. I mean, there's a lot more behind the scenes that went into these decisions when you peel back a lot of things. On the surface, it looks like, hey, you got this money, just fund it. But there's other things that went into the decision that I don't think would be proper to discuss in public. But I think long term, this is going to be the best route to go in order to service our kids and keep those meaningful relationships with tutors and mentors alive.
Superintendent Michael Testani for Bridgeport, we so appreciate you coming on this morning and looking forward to hopefully talking to you again near the end of the summer when we get closer to back to school season.
Absolutely. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
What's happening in Washington and how it affects you? Melissa in the Morning. Welcome Congressman Jim Himes to WICC 600.
Good morning, Congressman Himes. It's been a few weeks, and actually it was a little bit back that you were named the leader, basically, of this congressional panel addressing racial wealth gaps in the United States. So first and foremost, congratulations on that. What are you hoping to do in this role?
Thank you, Melissa. Yeah, it's great to be back. And you're right, Speaker Pelosi asked me to be chairman of a select committee on economic disparity. And I'm really excited. You know, economic disparity is obviously a real problem around the country. It's particularly visible in our part of the country, right? Here in southwestern Connecticut, we have some of the wealthiest people around. And of course, we also have people who are living in poverty. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that offends most people's moral sensibilities, Melissa, but it's also, you know, it's an economic problem, too. You know, folks that are that don't have the skills that allow them to hold good jobs, it's hard for them to contribute to the economy. You know, if you're not making much money, it's hard for you to go out and buy a car and contribute to the economy that way. You know, so it's a big problem. I think it has political effects, too. You know, I think a lot of our recent politics are driven by the fact that people feel like, you know, middle class feels like they really struggle to keep their heads above water. And so we're going to work for the next year and a half or so and try to propose some solutions. I imagine those solutions will have to do with making housing a little bit more affordable, you know, probably a fairer tax code where, you know, the truly big earners, the billionaires, the corporations are paying their fair share of taxes. But, you know, I don't want to jump ahead of the work we're going to do, but very exciting topic. And as I said before, really, really visible in the place where where we all live.
So what are some things, Congressman Himes, that you can take away from, like you mentioned, Fairfield County or even New Haven County alone? I mean, but you strictly work in Fairfield County. You know, what can you take away from, you know, your time serving this area and bring it to a national scale? Like, what are some parallels that we could bring to the table that Connecticut has done well in sort of making that gap not so wide?
Sure. Well, one example of something that Connecticut has done well, and it's doing well around the country, is an emphasis on community colleges, right? We've got some wonderful community colleges, Housatonic, Norwalk Community College. Community colleges are one of the best ladders that are available to people who maybe don't, you know, who maybe start out without a high school education. And remember, Melissa, in this day and age, this wasn't true 50 years ago, but if all you've got is a high school education, it's going to be really hard for you to be middle class in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And the community colleges, Housatonic, Norwalk Community College, are places where you can get that nursing degree, where you can get that, you know, physician's assistant degree that allows you to really significantly increase the amount of money you earn. And again, that's good for you, and it's good for all of us, right? You know, somebody who is struggling to keep it all together with a couple of children is probably on a variety of different welfare programs that cost money, whereas somebody who's earning real money is paying taxes and contributing to the economy. So I'm really looking, I will be looking in the next 18 months for those win-wins. You know, those things we can do to, you know, give people the tools they need to, you know, raise the bottom of that disparity, if you will.
Congressman Jim Himes is here. And the last time we spoke, Congressman, the last couple of times we spoke, actually, we were discussing the potential infrastructure bill. And I know yesterday the House approved a $715 billion surface transportation and water bill. And I was curious, first of all, I don't know if Congress is going forward with this. I don't know what your thoughts are on what the current bill looks like, the one that the House just approved. But could you maybe talk on that a little bit and how that's going to impact Connecticut?
Absolutely. Infrastructure is a topic, obviously, we've all been talking about for a very, very long time.
Yes.
And we've made some real progress in the last couple of weeks. And look, this is just great for our area of Connecticut, right? I mean, there's just not one of us who isn't sitting in traffic again, isn't one of us who's on a Metro North, which travels at the same speed it did 70 years ago. We know how important investment in our infrastructure is because infrastructure really, you know, and corroded infrastructure really worsens our quality of life down here. So people will have seen that the president and a bipartisan group of senators reached a deal for a bipartisan bill over in the Senate. And this week we passed one over, as you said, about $715 billion in size on the House side. That's a major, major investment in our infrastructure. And it's going to mean improvements to Amtrak, improvements to Metro North, and improvements for a lot of little local projects, which aren't sexy, but which really make a difference in the day-to-day lives of a lot of people. I requested and got in the bill about $3.5 million for the Stamford train station, busiest station between New York and Boston. And it is, to put it kindly, a little old school.
Mm-hmm.
But again, not sexy stuff. You know, the town of Trumbull, there's money in there to rebuild the Route 25 bridge, which means that everybody in that area will have a slightly better and faster commute than they do today. So we're not done yet. We're not done yet. We got to get the two houses to pass one bill. But I'm confident that this will be signed into law, and it'll be a good thing for those of us in this part of the country.
Yeah, and don't worry, Congressman Himes, not looking for anything sexy. I definitely think, though, that these are really big things. Like, I know when you and I talked, there was, forgive me, I think it was Monroe. I can't even remember because all the news and everything that's going on. But I think there was one town you were hoping for, like, laptops. I know that we've been looking for more Wi-Fi capability and things like that. So, I mean, sure, maybe not the sexiest headline, but to me, I think that these are the things that, like, our listeners specifically are almost taking notes and saying, okay, so like, what is this going to mean for me? So no, I mean, any of those nitty gritty details, we really appreciate them.
Yeah, absolutely. And if people want to look at what I'm referring to here, the laptops that we talked about, those were provided to children who had to distance learn, who didn't have them. That was part of the
Correct.
CARES bill.
Okay.
So that's not infrastructure. Although the infrastructure bill does contain some funds to make sure that all Americans have access to broadband.
Okay.
But quick note, and my staff always tells me not to seek controversy, but the project I was telling you about in Trumbull and in Stamford, those are earmarks, and we haven't had earmarks for a long time, 10 years or so in the congressional budget bills. They became controversial because of the famous Bridge to Nowhere. We've revamped the project. So today we have earmarks, which means I can bring money into communities. And people say, oh, I hate earmarks. Well, the rules today say that if I ask for an earmark, I have to put on my website, and you can go to my website and look at all these projects and say, here's what I've done, here's what I've asked for, and I also need to represent, I need to say that I have zero financial interest or any other interest in the project. And the reason that I think these are good things, particularly under this new transparent way of doing them, is, you got to ask yourself, do you want Himes, who, every single day is driving around Trumbull and Ridgefield and Norwalk and Fairfield, helping to decide where the funds go, or do you want some bureaucrat on the ninth floor of some gray building in Washington making those decisions? And the answer is obviously a little bit of both, but this bill allows me to take a bunch of targeted projects that we need to get done now and fund them. So I'm hopeful that those will prevail and that we will get those resources.
Well, Congressman Himes, we appreciate the update this morning. Welcome back to the show, and we'll talk again after the holiday weekend. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Melissa. Take care.
All right, you too. Joining us on the show this morning for the first time is Commissioner Brian Hurlburt with the Department of Agriculture. And Brian, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Melissa, thanks for having us, and thanks for your interest in Connecticut agriculture.
I know you and I, Brian, talked off the air a little bit. Being born and raised in Connecticut, I don't think I ever really understood the importance of the Department of Ag or even farmers in general. It wasn't until I lived in Vermont that I realized, holy moly, the workload that goes into becoming a farmer and being in this industry. How essential is it that we are taking care of our farmers and that their products actually, it does have a trickle-down effect. It does impact us here in our listening area.
What people don't think about, because Connecticut farms have been around for centuries and they're spread out all over the state, heavily in more areas, the northwest, northeast corner. But there's 5,500 farms in Connecticut, and those are small businessmen and women who are running a really challenging operation. Farming is the only industry where you can do everything right and still have a loss at the end of the year. Your weather is out of your control. The market might be out of your control. And so it's a huge risk to be in farming. But that activity, that economic output, creates $4 billion to Connecticut's economy and employs over 21,000 people. So it's a pretty significant industry in the scheme of things. Even in the state of Connecticut, that's, a small size in a lot of urban and suburban areas. And what they produce, right, is really important. They produce food, fiber, and farm products that we all take advantage of and seek out. So it's really important that, just like we want to support all of our small businesses across the state, our locally owned businesses, that we think about the local farm as a local small business and put it in that category when you're buying your holiday gifts or when you're planning your July 4th cookout or picnic. If you want to shop small, shop local, make sure you tuck a farm stand or a farmer's market into your shopping plans to support those local businesses.
And Brian, you were saying actually that some of the most lucrative farms in Connecticut are actually in New Haven County. I did not realize that.
That's right. There are some tremendous vegetable operations right off 91 that do a great job, a lot of terrific soils down there. They do a lot of wholesale. You don't necessarily know that they're a Connecticut product when you buy it at a grocery store or at a different farmer's market or farm stand. But those farms are putting out a lot of product. And one of the things that we've been trying to do is elevate the consumer awareness of what is Connecticut grown and where these things are coming from. And to that end, we launched in the middle of the pandemic a revised and refreshed Connecticut Grown media campaign. And so you should be seeing now, for those people who are now commuting back and forth to work along the 84, 91, and 95 corridors, our Connecticut Grown ads up on the billboards. While you're streaming through Facebook, you should be seeing our Connecticut Grown ads popping up in your feeds or on YouTube, because we really want to make sure that people realize that these farms are out there. And what they produce. I mean, right now you could be getting cherries and corn, for your July 4th picnic. You could pick up some oysters or clams. We've got a number of beef operations. So if you want hot dogs and hamburgers, you can make sure those are Connecticut grown hot dogs and hamburgers. Outside of your what people normally think of as, your cucumbers and tomatoes and squashes, there's a lot of variety out there to take advantage of.
We're talking to Brian Hurlburt this morning, the commissioner at the Department of Agriculture. And Brian, I'm curious, what have been some of the trends coming into this summer season? I know just from reading a lot that, like, there are some things that have done great. One of our local farmers here in Fairfield County, like their berry season, for example, it was unbelievable. Came earlier, the best berries he had seen in 50 years. But then I look at like maple syrup, for example, that struggled significantly in the winter going into the spring. Could you maybe talk about some farming trends for this year?
Yeah. So, I'll wrap into climate change into this conversation because the trends are changing and they're challenging. And although the weather was really good for berries this year, we had a couple of rainstorms on the weekends. And for the pick your own operations, that's when people are coming to pick berries. We just had, at least here, I'm in northeastern Connecticut, the past couple of days, we had some really tremendous rainstorms, really intense, a lot of rain. You know, to manage that is very difficult. But what we've seen kind of, you know, from the start of the pandemic till about now is a renewed interest in Connecticut agriculture. Farms that were doing direct consumer in some cases saw huge increases in revenue. They also experienced increases in costs because they had more staff and they had, more hand sanitizer and different protocols in order to make sure that they were operating safely. But people showed up. We were able at the department, recognizing that if you were in a wholesale market, and, down in Fairfield County, we've got a lot of great oyster operations, that are farming Long Island Sound. They were almost 100% institutional sales. So when restaurants and hotels closed, their market essentially disappeared. So we helped them transition to a direct consumer. We gave them a marketing toolkit. And some social media help to make sure that they knew how to connect with consumers directly as opposed to what they had been doing for their wholesale sales for so many years. And I was just checking in with an oyster farm not too long ago. I said, how's it going? You know, last year we had all those challenges and the changes. You know, where are we this year? And the farmer looked at me with his eyebrows raised and he said, we're doing more retail than wholesale. And last year we didn't even do retail. So the change is that the closer that people come to their farmers and their farm products, the more money goes and ends up in the farmers' hands. And we're helping farms make this transition from their previous models to the new model, which is going to be profitable for them.
We're talking this morning to Brian Hurlburt, who's the commissioner at the Department of Agriculture. So getting back to your point of also the fact that climate change does take effect when it comes to farmers, what can be done? I mean, I know that retail has picked up, which never really was a thing before, so that is good. But I have to imagine, Brian, that you guys are kind of keeping your sights set on, where we're still going as a planet and what this is going to mean for our farmers.
We are. And we participate in the Governor's Council on Climate Change, which the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection was running with an Ag and Soils Working Group. And we brought in different stakeholders and partner organizations from Yukon Extension to the Farm Bureau to the Northeast Organic Farmers Association to the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station to talk about how can we manage climate change. The weather events are getting more intense, shorter duration, longer periods between rainfall. But in the end, the same amount of rainfall, just a more intense rainfall. So how do you manage that? So it becomes really important that our soils can absorb more water and moisture to extend between those periods. And so working on things like no-till and cover crops that put nutrients and organic material back into the soils helps retain water, reduces runoff, and it helps manage those, those dramatic downpours in those extended periods of time without rain. Helping people transition and do more indoor agriculture. So in the greenhouses, are there ways for us to transition and do some vegetable production and fruit production in greenhouses? And the way we're helping this process along is we're using our grant programs to help people manage the risk of doing that. Right? If you're essentially creating a new business venture, There's a lot of risk. Are you going to have a market? Is something going to grow? What about training your staff? What happens if there's an error? We'll be making an announcement soon enough, but I can tell you that we're going to award a farm in Connecticut that is under glass, so it's in a greenhouse, a transition grant to grow tomatoes and pepper plants in the off season when it makes sense to be doing this, that will go along with our tomato production. So we're trying to help people manage those transitions and the risk that's associated with them.
Wow, I think that's going to be really cool, and I definitely look forward to getting that announcement. So, Brian Hurlburt, a commissioner of the Department of Agriculture, I think my last question is pretty simple. You know, I think, like I said in the beginning of this, the one thing I wish I had known more about as a kid growing up in Connecticut was accessing our farms, and I appreciate it so much as an adult bringing my son to local farms and, you know, using farmers markets, which, again, stems from local farms a lot of times. Is there a way that people could, like, access a grand list or something to see where farms are, if they're going on road trips or even just closer in their communities?
I want to tell all your listeners that we didn't set this up, but thank you for that question. We have been working with the Connecticut Northeast Organic Farmers Association on our ctgrownmap.com and also with our Connecticut Grown campaign on ctgrown.org. So ctgrownmap.com or ctgrown.org. Go to those websites and you can find a list of what's around you, what's in season. You can see some recipes about what to do with those things. On the map site, what's also really important is that everybody in the state has access to Connecticut Grown products. And so we include in there whether they accept WIC or SNAP or any other tender purchasing power at the farm, so that regardless of how you're going to pay, you can still get access to these great products. And like you said, Melissa, it's a great way to get out with your family. I take my kids, I've got two young girls, and we go to farmers markets and farm stands, and we talk about what we're going to buy and what we're going to make with it and how we're going to, prepare it. So we get them involved, and it's a fun family experience. You can go cherry picking this weekend if you want to. One of my daughters doesn't like cherries, but she's a great picker. The other one really likes cherries. She's not the greatest picker, but
they make a great team.
Getting out, that's what they say. They're like, Daddy, we make a great team. And I said, well, I really need six hands picking, but it's a great way to spend a couple hours with a fun activity. You don't even think about, like, you're going shopping and you're supporting this business. You really just think about, like, hey, let's go do this.
Right.
And the farm that we go cherry picking in Central Connecticut here also does cherry donuts. And if you haven't had one of those, it is an awesome experience. And it's a nice reward for those little hands that were helping you out getting through, a couple hours of cherry picking. ctgrownmap.com and ctgrown.org. Two easy ways to find out how you can support and where you can go to support Connecticut farms.
Well, Brian, I could tell you right now, I would love to have you back on the show really soon, and I would love a cherry donut really soon. So all of that sounds great. That sounds amazing.
I can guarantee to be back on the show. I can't guarantee you the cherry donut.
All right. No, it's fine. I just got to go searching for it, and I will do it. We will scavenge around, and we will find ourselves a cherry donut. I love that. And Brian Hurlburt, the commissioner of the Department of Agriculture, I loved talking to you this morning. Thank you so much.
This was great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, and we'll do this again.